Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's show. And welcome to September, my birth month. In opening today's show, I just thought I'd talk about something for a moment. I listen to podcasts all the time. I love listening to everything from crime shows to even the end of the world type of stuff. And I occasionally like to listen to creative fiction that people put on their podcasts. As I build my website that's going to complement this podcast, I plan on listing what I listen to so that other people can get into them as well. Most of them are well established, so my two cents isn't going to do much to boost them that much, but I like to share that kind of stuff. And who knows, maybe one of these days one of those places will list my podcast as well. Hope springs eternal, you know? But this process, building this podcast, is an exercise in learning for me as well. I had most of the equipment I needed to do this from a short-lived attempt that my son and I had made years ago to start our own podcast called Samurai and Son. It didn't take off, and then COVID happened, and it kind of screwed with everything. I think everybody listening to this knows the cluster that was COVID. But now that I had the equipment, and while it seemed fine at the time, it's also dated, so I'm learning as I go forward what I can work with and what I can't work with in the devices I have. As I mentioned in my other podcast, I received an email from a gentleman named Max that alluded to my last show that I sound new to this, and that's because I am new to this. In spite of the fact I had that short-lived attempt, and I think we only did 8 podcasts, this is all very new to me. And I appreciate everybody having the patience to listen to me as I grow, and the returning people, the fact that you are returning, I appreciate that a great deal. But as it said, every great journey starts like this, right? As the famous saying goes, every great journey begins with a single step. Or actually, I think a trip of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, something like that. Yeah, you look it up. I'm not going to do that now. It's my hope that I can attract new writers to join me in this endeavor so that I can grow with them and then maybe they with me. I can talk about their books and be a place that maybe others, both writers and authors, come to listen to who I might be able to help or promote, or the other way around. If you're an established author and you just started listening and you happen to like what I'm doing, I'm not going to argue with you if you say you want to spread the word about me. I mean, why would I? I don't expect this to take off, at least not right away. It's all about baby steps, though, right? We all have to start somewhere. And if not here, then where? If not now, then when? So for better or worse, join me in this journey, please, and let's see where we can take it. So, with that said, on with the show. Today we're cracking open the genre vault and poking around the three-headed beast that is speculative fiction. While not everyone splits it up like this, though I have seen people do it, to me this would be hard science, soft science, and fantasy science, or science fantasy, however you want to notate that last one. Think of these as all as part of a spectrum of sorts. On one end, you've got the engineers scribbling equations in zero-G while trying not to vomit into the air filtration system. While others are running around trying to keep the various systems together without letting the command staff know that there's a problem to begin with. You know, typical politics. On the other end of the spectrum, you have the poets, the sociologists, the philosophers, dreaming up alien civilizations and with better health care, cleaner air, and more emotionally available politicians, and the occasional cleric running around with a laser sword, talking about prophecies and cutting people in half. And then, somewhere in the middle, there is a cyborg wizard with a serious attitude problem, and he's riding a genetically modified dragon through a wormhole, probably late for a quantum ethics seminar. So let's begin at the sharp end of the stick. Hard science fiction. It sounds kind of scary when I say it like that, right? Now, don't get too upset. No, it's just written that way. Hard sci-fi is the genre's precision instrument. It's like a scalpel wielded by a physicist with a flair for drama and an overactive imagination, bent on trying to prove something to his college literary arts teacher. It's obsessed with plausibility, technical accuracy, and extrapolation from known laws of physics, chemistry, and engineering. It's not just about the shiny gadgets, though it has plenty of those, and in many different examples. It's more about the systems, the consequences, and the occasional existential crises brought about by orbital decay and backed up waste processing systems. Here the story doesn't just show you what happens. It explains why it happens, how it happens, and whether it violates Newton's third law in the process. Spoiler, if you're true to the genre, it doesn't. There are so many people that write in this area, and many of them are very good at it, even great. There are also a few that, no, I will not name names, that do not do so good at it, and should probably keep their day jobs, working in the dark, hidden labs at their universities. They are good at what they do, tried their hands at sci-fi, so give them their due, pat them on the back, and let's move on. You'll find this flavor of science fiction in the works of S.A. Corey, Andy Weir, Liu Cixin, and other authors similar to that. Authors who write for the scientifically curious and the narratively hungry. Also, for those that appreciate it when an author gets it right. The ones that know that heavy water is not an energy drink and deuterium is not the name of a death metal band. Though, that would work though, wouldn't it, huh? If you read The Expanse, The Martian, Project Hail Mary, or The Three-Body Problem, you've already dipped your toes into the vacuum-sealed pool of hard sci-fi. You know what these stories are, you know what they're like, and have probably modeled some of your own writing after their works. And let's be honest here. Imitation is the greatest form of flattery. That's been said many times. And I have no doubt that if you have something published and people have read it, there is someone out there who's going to read your work and say, yeah, I know who their work was influenced by. Yes, these authors will bend the rules occasionally, but usually in a way that does not seem too extreme or out there, and only in a way that matches what theory will allow. And then afterwards, they always send a polite apology memo to Neil deGrasse Tyson in the hopes that he blesses them with a nod. So what makes hard sci-fi tick, or differentiates it from its cousins? And what makes it something that people want to read? And that is a great question. So make sure your coffee cup's full, and let's move on. You have to remember that with hard sci-fi, causality is king. Every plot twist must obey the laws of nature. You have to remember that in hard sci-fi, causality is king. Every plot twist must obey the laws of nature, the real ones, not the ones you create just for the story. The point is that you can read it and relate to the physics of the universe that you both share, both you as the person and what's being written in the book. If a spaceship accelerates, the author knows, and may even be nice enough to tell you about its fuel source, how the engine works, what the reaction mass is doing, the thrust vector, and gravitational or acceleration implications. You know those pesky G-forces and their complications that other sci-fi tends to hide behind things like inertial dampeners and artificial gravity plating. And if it accelerates too fast or slows too suddenly, they remind you about the squishy bits inside. You know, the crew. And how they might become puddles of goo that were once your lead characters and are now a macabre human-sized jello snack pack. Your characters in this genre will serve the science. Your protagonists either tend to be engineers, physicists, or astronauts, or some combination of the three. Or are characters in the story that understand enough to listen to the people who are, and while they're on the same ship together. If there's a command staff, they're usually just there to ask the smart people what buttons to push, if they don't have a background in the other three sciences. Internal conflicts in these stories often mirror external scientific dilemmas, like whether to save the crew or preserve the experiment, or to preserve a planet that may be at risk. World building can usually be rigorous. These authors construct entire worlds and their ecosystems. They play with orbital mechanics and alien biologies with the same obsessive care a scientist might give to their coffee maker when they know they're about to spend another night trying to explain biology to a politician. Tone and texture is often clinical, methodical, intellectually challenging. If done well, it keeps your brain engaged without making you feel like you've accidentally wandered into a surprise physics lecture while you're on your way to the coffee shop. There is a balance required there. And they know it. The writer knows it. At least the good ones do. You don't want to treat your reader like they're dumb. But you also don't want your story to feel like it requires a graduate degree in physics. Dialogue tends to be functional. When reading these books, you should expect technical jargon, equations, philosophical debates about entropy, AI ethics, or quantum uncertainty. But don't worry, any romantic subplots are rarely interrupted by someone shouting about hyperdrive reactor cores going critical, unless it's absolutely necessary. And then they can just segue to the fun stuff afterwards. Yeah, some of us nerdy types do know how to write steamy scenes from time to time. Yeah, give us credit for that. While there are a lot of really good writers out there that know how to work in this area, for the sake of time and an attempt to keep this podcast below 30 minutes, I'll keep the list short. I mentioned some of these people before, and I do recommend reading them. But some more of them that I would recommend are Rendezvous with Rama by Arthur C. Clarke, Permutation City by Greg Egan, The Three-Body Problem by Liu Shaoshan, I always hope I get that name pronounced correctly, and both Martian and Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir. I heard that I saw the movie The Martian, and I think they did a good job making it into a movie. I see they're making a movie on Project Hail Mary, and God, I hope they don't mess that up. That book was so good. But there's also The Expanse by S.A. Corey. So in a nutshell, hard sci-fi interrogates the limits of human understanding. Consider it a form of specular realism, asking, what if, but only within the bounds of what could be, might be, or already is. Assuming the math checks out.
We all start somewhere, and when you're launching your first book, a little support can go a long way. We won't promise you the moon, or a 5-star review, but we'd love to be part of your journey. If you're a new author putting your debut out into the world, we'd be thrilled to read your work and feature it on the podcast. This isn't a critique, and we won't be dragging your literary baby through the mud if it doesn't move us. Instead, we'll introduce you, share your book with our listeners, and talk about it in a thoughtful, objective way, highlighting what makes it unique and where folks can find it. Here's how it works. We'll write a short segment about your book and send you the script. If you're happy with it, we'll air it as is. If it's not quite your cup of tea, no hard feelings. We'll thank each other for the time and move on. Sound good? Drop me a line at booktalk@inkcoffeeandregrets.com. We can't wait to hear from you and to help your words find their way into the world.
It's a genre that explores isolation, determinism, and fragile scaffolding of civilization. Usually while someone is trying to fix a broken airlock with duct tape and despair while MacArthur Park is playing over the speakers. And that would be the Richard Harris version of MacArthur Park, not the Donna Summer disco version. Although I would add that the disco version would be another level of torture for an already torturous song. Now that I've gotten you through that, let's move on to soft science fiction. No, that's not in segue into adult films. Soft science fiction shifts the spotlight from the nuts and bolts of physics to the squishier realms of psychology, philosophy, sociology, and anthropology and ethics. It's less about the warp drive or the somebody else's problem drive and how those work, and more about what happens to the people once they've gotten those things. In this style of writing, you have to remember that the tech is there, but it's not the star of the show. It's the catalyst for exploring what it means to be, well, whatever species you're writing about that. Traits you'll often find in soft sci-fi. Emotion and behavior take center stage. The drama isn't in the circuitry. It's in the characters. Okay, so let me correct that part. I am sure that some of you out there just said, what if the story is about a robot civilization? Then, yeah, okay, you got me. In that case, yes, the drama might be in the circuitry. But that's picking nits. But here, the story is about the relationships, their choices, their existential crises over breakfast, and the message they just saw in their bowl of alphabets. If the story is about humans, great. If it's about telepathic mollusks, then just swap the species and keep the angst. Speculative societies can be a major part of these stories. Authors imagine alternate societal structures. Gender norms may be different than what you're already familiar with. Or even the political systems are often used as allegories of our own. It's a clever way for the author to critique today's world and politics without getting yelled at on Twitter. The setting may be alien, but the message will hit real close to home if you pay attention. Science is a theme, but it's not the blueprint. You won't get schematics for a time machine. You'll get a story about memory, loss, regret, causality. The tech is there to stir the pot, but not to be dissected. Think of it as philosophical seasoning, but not the main course. These stories may have lyrical, character-driven storytelling that tends to linger. They stay in the back of your mind, keeping you thinking about them for some time, either about the story itself or the characters that you've grown attached to or even maybe fell in love with. They're emotionally resonant, sometimes poetic, occasionally religious or quasi-religious, and often leave you staring into space, wondering if your toaster has feelings. Again, some really good examples, but far from the only works, are out there to look at are Ursula K. Le Guin's The Left Hand of Darkness. Okay, I'm going to have to stop myself here for a moment. Honestly, nearly everything by Le Guin fits in this category. This reminds me, if I can take a moment, and I'm sure I can because it's my show. I first stumbled into Le Guin's universe by way of the 1980 film adaptation of the book Lathe of Heaven, starring Bruce Davison. At the time, the movie confused the heck out of me. So I tried reading the book. And truth be told, that didn't help either. It only served to confuse me a little bit more. As I got older and wiser, I read the book again. And it made sense. Then recently, I watched the movie again. And I can say by today's standards, yes, the movie is dated. Yes, it's campy. But in reality, the message still punches through. It still has a very strong message. But once I understood the story, I devoured the book, and then several others of hers. But I will tell you that she is not an easy read. Someone once told me, she writes with the assumption that the reader already knows what she's talking about. And they're right. Reading Le Guin is like learning a new language. The more you read, the more fluent you become. But in the end, it's absolutely worth it. So, back on to topic. The other books are Octavia Butler's Parable of a Sower. It's a haunting, prescient look at society unraveling, and then rebuilding. It's filled with empathy, grit, and afterwards you need to take a breath and think about what you just read. And like me, you just might read it again. Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451. This was a required reading for me when I was in high school, and like any kid, you don't enjoy something when somebody puts a book into your face and says, read it now, then tell me about it. So I read it in high school, and I couldn't tell you anything about the book at that time. Then, a few years after I graduated, I read it again, and I really enjoyed it. And again, it's one of those books that's kind of prescient. It's less about the mechanics of book burning and more about the soul of a society that forgets why books matter and why they're important. And in losing that, who they become. Think that sounds kind of familiar? Sometimes just look out your window. Let's think of it this way. Soft sci-fi is a mirror held up to society. It's speculative anthropology with a dash of emotional sabotage. It's usually more politically charged, morally ambiguous, and philosophically chewy than its harder counterpart. It doesn't just tickle your technical brain. It plays a sonata on your heartstrings and then asks if you've considered therapy. And if so, it sends you to read Norman Mailer or Hunter Thompson for therapy. Lastly, let's talk about science fantasy. This is the genre's rebellious hybrid child. You could say it's raised on quantum mechanics, but sneaking out at night to go dance with dragons at a rave hosted by J.R.R. Tolkien, Snoop Dogg, and Timothy O'Leary. Science fantasy borrows from the aesthetic of science, spaceships, lasers, AI, and the like, but runs on a mythical or metaphysical rule. It's a genre where you can have a living starship powered by dragon blood, and no one bats an eye. But that's because the dragon was ordained by prophecy, and the fuel tank is blessed by a cyborg monk who speaks in binary haiku. From the creator's point of view, science fantasy is a playground with fewer offenses and more freedom to create. You don't have to worry about being excommunicated by the technophile clergy every time you bend a law of physics, because the rules are more philosophical than anything else. If your protagonist survives a black hole by whispering to it in an ancient elvish, then that's fine. Just make sure it's consistent with the rules of your universe. Your readers are not dumb. They will forgive almost anything, as long as you don't break your own rules or magic system halfway through chapter 12, just because it no longer works for you. This isn't politics. You can't change it as you go. Traits you'll typically find in science fantasy are science is used as a metaphor. Technology exists, but it's more for symbolism, representing power, fate, transcendence, or the author's unresolved feelings about the toaster they tried to fix with a butter knife when they were 8, and it shocked them and they thought they saw God. Here, technology is the backdrop. It's not the blueprint. Magic and mysticism coexist with technology here. You can expect to see cyborg priests invoking quantum spirits, starships that sail through psychic storms, or even hell. More about that later. And an AI that consults tarot cards before launching missiles. It's not about how, it's about why, and occasionally who cursed the navigation system. Genre fluidity here is the norm. Quests, chosen ones, ancient prophecies, all the fantasy tropes are welcome here, as long as they're wearing the right boots and clothes for the job at hand. The storytelling can be, and probably will be, lush and surreal. The language tends to be ornate, dreamlike, allegorical. It's the kind of writing that makes you feel like you've wandered into a cathedral made of starlight and unresolved trauma. Some good examples of these types of stories and of science fantasy, Annie McCaffrey's Dragon Riders series. Dragons that are genetically engineered to fight space spores. And yes, that's really what it's about. Star Wars, especially when you think about the Force, which is less midichlorian science and more space Buddhism meets wizardry. Gene Wolfe's The Book of the New Sun. I got most of the way through that. I do need to finish that book. But what I did read, I did enjoy. And while the next one I'm going to mention didn't have its start as a book, I have to mention it. And that's Warhammer 40K, or Warhammer 40,000, as some call it. This is a sprawling cathedral of lore built on the bones of science fiction and painted with the blood of 10,000 space marines. I mention Warhammer not because I'm a devotee, but because I respect the sheer scale of the storytelling. What began as a tabletop game has evolved into a mythos as vast and as fervently followed as The Lord of the Rings. It's science fantasy at its most operatic, peppered with soft science fiction themes, but unapologetically soaked in gothic absurdity. Frankly, I could never get into the game myself or into the books. Not for lack of trying. I really did. I wanted to enjoy this. I tried several times to read the books, and I even tried playing the game. It seems like something I could have really enjoyed, but I just couldn't get into it. But for those of you that are out there that are into it, I'd be interested in hearing your stories, because it has always fascinated me. Science fantasy explores the numinous, that shimmering sense that something lies beyond rationality. It's a genre of wonder, used to probe spirituality, destiny, and the limits of empirical thought. It doesn't ask what is possible, it more asks what is meaningful. and then answers it with a glowing sword, a whispered prophecy, and a spaceship that dreams in verse. So now, we come to you. What styles and what do you think you would consider to be your favorite to read or even write? Which of these do you enjoy reading? Which of these do you enjoy writing? I know I just kind of repeated myself there, but I'm sorry. As always, you can add your own bit of wisdom to the show by emailing me at samuel@inkcoffeeandregrets.com. Like I keep saying, I'm still working on putting a phone number together that people can call into, and that way I could actually even share your messages on the show. And if you don't have anything to add to the show and just want to say hi, then email me at hi@inkcoffeeandregrets.com. And with all that said, again, thank you very much for listening. You do not know how much I appreciate you being here. The show is about you as much as it is about me liking to talk about what I enjoy. So may your ink flow freely and often. May your coffee always be strong, warm, and inviting. And your regrets be few, but as deniable as possible. Once again, thank you, everybody. Until next time.